Welcome to Mean Age Daydream with me, Brian McWilliams, where we're going to be making some jokes, laughing out at broken world, but also laying out the philosophy for the future, how we can fix this mess we're in and have a great time doing it all with a Mean Age Daydream. What's up, buttercups? Welcome to Mean Age Daydream. I am Brian McWilliams. I know I look a little tired. I am a little tired. If you hadn't noticed on my Twitter, we're a little late today getting the show out. Apologies for that. I've just been dealing with some personal stuff that's depressing, but that doesn't mean that we can't talk about what's going on. Can't talk about liberty, freedom, BS, which, speaking of BS, I've just been watching, as some of you probably have, some of the clips coming out of this, the hearing that happened revolving around Robert Hur? Yeah, H-U-R. And I'm guessing it's spelled like, or pronounced like, Ben Hur. Robert Hur is, of course, I think, of the Asian persuasion. But who knows? Maybe Jesus was. People say he's black. People say he's Jewish. People say he's Arab. Really, Jesus is anything you want him to be, right? Jesus is the rainbow. He's all the colors. But Robert Hur is in there, and he's being interrogated by Republicans who are annoyed that he didn't try to prosecute Joe Biden, who, if you'll recall, he said was essentially guilty. And that was very clear that Biden had broken the law, that he had kept documents, that there was definitely a security risk, but that he was a very nice elderly man who basically had no idea what was happening. Right. You know, he had forgotten when his son died. He had forgotten when he was vice president. It was a damning report for the mental stability and capability of President Joe Biden, who's, of course, running for re-election. 4 more years of babbling incoherence and methamphetamines. But what was really embarrassing was not so much the Republicans going after him and saying, prosecute him, right? Quid pro quo for the prosecution of Trump, which was also ridiculous. But certain people, like, I think it's, is it Samantha J. Powell? Well, one of Representative J. Powell, and she was in there. Kind of reminds me of that Simpsons. You could call me Ray J. So J. Powell's in there. And she is, you know, talking to Robert Hur, and she goes, well, you know, this report completely exonerated Joe Biden, which it didn't. There's nothing in that report which comes close to exonerating Joe Biden. It, as I said, distinctly says the man is guilty as you could be, right, of endangering the documentary leakage of these reports. But she says it completely exonerates him, to which Robert Hur says, I never used exonerated in the report, right? Very clearly. And she then goes, talks over, and says, it's my time, sir. It was absurd. You're stating a complete inaccuracy. You're attacking this guy, right, for doing the special report. And the Democrats' entire strategy during this hearing was to attack Robert Hur for apparently creating a politicized report, and they use the phrase gratuitously. Now, if you'd watched the reports in the mainstream / corporate / sellout media, that is, of course, at the beck and call of the DNC, you'll notice that the word gratuitously was dipped and dotted throughout the entire news cycle in every single piece of reporting that came out. You know, this was synonymous through print media, you know, televised media, online media from the corporate shills. Clearly, the Democrats said, use the phrase gratuitously when describing how Robert Hur described Joe Biden's mental state. Gratuitously, oh, it was so over the top to call him mentally disabled, which he is. So, of course, you've got the use of gratuitous by Adam Schiff when also going after Robert Hur, saying that somehow he had created a politicized version of this and that Joe Biden should have been exonerated in this. It's just, it was embarrassing. It was insulting to see the Democrats take this tack. Now, Adam Schiff, of course, one of the biggest pieces of human garbage in the world. I'm desperately hoping that he gets unseated by Steve Garvey, who's running against him here in California. Just give me that, God. It's been a rough week. Just give me that. God, who I do not believe in. Sorry, folks. Not me. Not this guy. But it was just fascinating. And it's just amazing to see the outpouring of Democratic support for what is clearly a completely fabricated narrative. The Democrat support ongoing for Biden. Now, granted, a lot of these people have pulled away. There's a large component of Democrats now who no longer, at least if you believe polling, the large portion of Democrats who do not believe Joe Biden is capable of leading the country, that he should not be running for president. However, clearly he's going to be the guy. Unless something happens, unless he completely strokes out, he will be the guy. He managed to fumble through the State of the Union. I'll give John Ziegler credit, a friend of the show over at his podcast, The Death of Journalism, for his title, Forced Fumble, in regards to the State of the Union, because Marjorie Taylor Greene, of course, had yelled out, I believe it was MTG, had yelled out, say her name in regards to Lake and Riley. So Joe Biden, forced into addressing the name of the girl who, of course, was murdered by an illegal immigrant, undocumented immigrant. We'll get to that in a second. Joe Biden then says Lincoln Riley, who is a coach, I believe, at USC. So he fumbles and fumbles the name, right? He flubs it completely. And then in the aftermath, when people call him out for misstating the girl's name, which I think he had a button right in front of him that said it on it, he misstates the girl's name, aka the forced fumble. And instead of saying, I apologize deeply to the family of this murdered girl for misstating her name during the State of the Union. Instead of that, he says, I regret calling the illegal alien an illegal alien. I should have used undocumented, because obviously there has been a progressive war against the definition of words, of meanings, very intentional, by the way. And this goes through everything from transgender ideology through to the use of the word racist and Nazi and everything else. So their war on our overall understanding and concept of language has extended into immigration, naturally, just like it has with climate change. But Joe Biden's going to be the guy, right? And it's amazing to see Democrats try to defend Joe Biden and argue and believe that this report was overly politicized. A Department of Justice, which has been, by the way, highly politicized under Joe Biden. Look at everything that's going on with going after Donald Trump, right? The Department of Justice Special Counsel, which I guess I'm presuming was picked by, Merrick Garland, right? But yet, anything that comes out that doesn't go with the Democrat narrative is hyper-politicized, right? This man can't be trusted. He's clearly going for Donald Trump. He's attacking Joe Biden. It's absurd. And these piddling morons, carpet-piddling morons from the left will just go along with it instead of seeing the clear deterioration of a man's mental state in front of their eyes. It's amazing to me that people can deny reality so forcefully in chasing a political ideology. As I said, I don't believe in God. And, Dave Smith had posted this, and this is something I've also said many a time. The God of the left is now the Democratic ideology, or it's climate change. And one thing that was interesting that I will say is, Dave had posted that the God of many libertarians has become libertarianism, because there's many libertarians, a shocking amount, by the way, that are Christian. And we were kind of joking about the libertarian to post-libertarian to hardcore Christian pipeline that seems to exist. And I think our very own Mark Claire has gone down that line, or our former Mark Claire, but still friend. But it was kind of interesting, because it ties into, this philosophy that libertarians have made libertarianism their God. And of course, there's always the Hoppe book, The God That Failed, Democracy, The God That Failed, which is a great read. But the libertarians that have made libertarianism their God, to me, are problematic. And that might come across as shocking, considering I'm the communications director for the Libertarian Party, but it's actually something that, for me, I'm working to undercut a bit. And by the way, thank you to the Michigan Libertarian Party for flying me out and having me host their MC their convention this past weekend. Big ups to you guys. Thank you. Had a great time. Great meeting all the presidential candidates, by the way, that were there as well. Mike Termat, Lars Mapst, Chase Oliver. We had Charles Ballet, and of course, Jacob Hornberger. But in regards to this libertarianism as God, I'll tell you, and I've said this at the show before, what I'm trying to do with what we're working on, and there's going to be some big announcements forthcoming in the next month, from the party, big changes, is I honestly want far crappier libertarians. The only way forward for the party is not to create and to showcase as much dead set, you know, God is libertarianism, libertarians, because number one, you get nothing but infighting. You get nothing but purity tests. You get nothing but people getting nothing done because they are arguing over an infinitesimally small point within the philosophy or the philosophy of libertarianism and just creating schisms in there. But as I said, what I want is shittier libertarians in mass that will possibly become more ideologically converted. But for the most part, lend us political power, lend us financial power and voting power, you know, at the box and then check out. Because that's what the thing is. People don't realize the mass amount of people that are within these two spectrum parties, right? Within the Republicans and the Democrats, they're not hardcore. They're not well-versed. We talk about this all the time. The voting blocks, the masses of voters are, for the most part, fucking idiots. And idiots and imbeciles. And while I have to believe that we'll get a far higher quality of imbecile in our party, and that's what I want, to have any real power, we need those people that are checked out. And to be honest, we need them just as much as we need people that are philosophically pure, that are helping to lead the party in the right direction, hoping to check us and keep us on track. We need those people in mass. And I hope that people understand that. I hope that they realize to get enough momentum, to get enough of a weight and a gravity, that's what we have to get to. And that's going to mean altering some of the messaging that we have and allowing people to find their way forward through that message. Anyway, let's get on to some other topics here. Because I've got a few things I want to hit on today. So as the headline of the episode of the first thing, it's been fascinating, right? As I mentioned, I flew to Michigan. I flew on United. I was on a Boeing plane. I think I was on two different Boeing planes. And as I'm flying, I'm like literally getting on the plane and I'm reading all of this news about wheels falling off. Like I literally sat down on the plane and the guy next to me is like, "Hey man, you hear the wheel flew off a United plane just now?" And I'm like, "Oh, that's great. That's what I like to hear." And this is I don't remember if it was the United plane that the door flew off mid-flight as well. I'm not blaming United for this necessarily, although it's concerning. But it was like in the same week, like a wheel falls off a plane that's a Boeing plane. I think they're like a plane that was Boeing flies off the end of the runway. Something else happened with wrap being sucked into an engine. Now you can't blame Boeing for that, right? That's like when Sully Sullenberger flew into a goose. But Boeing's been taking hits, and not only has Boeing been taking hits in the recent news, we know historically within the last few years, their MAX jets had to be called back because of all sorts of issues. They're getting slower and slower getting things off the runway and out to deliver. They've had massive issues even delivering for the United States government. But Boeing is and always has been propped up by the import-export bank, by bailouts from government, right? By big government contracts, which they are under almost no pressure to deliver anything on time or that is functional, because that's the way that government works. So why wouldn't Boeing, as one of the government's favored sons, work in the same manner? But you're seeing this company, which they will tell you, and just wait, because you're going to see a bailout forthcoming. And as I mentioned, the Import-Export Bank already funds all these major, quote unquote, vital American interest companies. They'll continue to do it. So on top of a bailout you're going to see coming, which politicians will describe Boeing as a vital company to American interests. And maybe it is because we put so many eggs in that basket insofar as creating aircraft for us, even Lockheed Martin. But Boeing is going to get the full hand job from the government, because it also comes at a time when, and I don't know how many people know this story, there is specific search functions you can put into, like if you're booking through Kayak or one of these other aggregator services, they allow you to put in what kind of plane you want to fly on. And because of all the issues with Boeing lately, you've had people put in during their searches that they don't want to fly on Boeing planes. People are searching, and it's skyrocketed in the last couple of months. They're searching for Airbus rather than Boeing and all these alternative planes. So Boeing's in a world of hurt. We're going to see massive bailouts. But what's really interesting is that in the midst of this, there's an engineer who worked at Boeing for 30 years and is now dead. Rest in peace. His name was John Barnett. His name was John Barnett. John Barnett, whistleblower who had been involved in a lawsuit against Boeing. And this is a lawsuit because he's trying to expose the fact that their engineering standards have dropped precipitously. He died March 9th in South Carolina, 62 years old. And this is right before, by the way, he was due in court for a hearing. So in the middle of the court, in the middle of the hearings, in the middle of his lawsuit, right, against Boeing, turns up dead in his car. From, quote, what appears to be a self-inflicted gunshot wound, according to the Charleston County Coroner's Office. No other details have been released. Really interesting timing, don't you think? The only thing that honestly, and by the way, I 100% believe Boeing would have somebody killed. I have zero doubt it's something that might save them some embarrassment should this whistleblowing lawsuit come through. The only thing that makes me question it is that it's so obvious. You know, and this is where we get down into conspiracies and you think, okay, this is, of course he got killed. Of course they killed this whistleblower in the midst of all of this traction for terrible things happening to Boeing planes. But it's so obvious, it does make you wonder if he did kill himself. But then I have to question myself again and say, maybe that's the tactic. They're like, well, you know, we could have him have a heart attack. You know, maybe if I poke him with some uranium like the Russians did with umbrellas. A little poke in the leg. By the way, I've been watching a great show called Slow Horses on Apple Plus. Good show. Gary Oldman's in, gross and old in it. Libertarian Gary Oldman, by the way, is in it. Gross and old and funny. But it's like, you know, those things. How many times can you check yourself before you go crazy with whether or not this man was suicided, Arkansided, as they say, although I don't know if Hillary Clinton herself pulled the trigger for Boeing. It's possible. What does she have to do, right? Other than make stupid television content with her ugly, nepotistic daughter. But just reading from this Epoch Times story, in a recent live streamed interview on TMZ, Mr. Barnett, who carried out safety checks and oversaw aircraft production, raised concern about quality control issues specifically within the 737 and 787 aircraft programs. He claimed that removal of inspection operations from jobs led to defects and safety issues. And yeah, so a door plug blew out on an Alaska Airlines. It wasn't United. And he says, this is not a 737 problem. It's a Boeing problem. Certainly seems like the man was taken out, but who's to say? Who's to say, guys? But you do wonder, right, over the overall American corporate environment, if this is something that's going to be more widespread. And I know a lot of people, by the way, I'm not going to get into the whole road of DEI hiring within the airline industry. I know that I've read stories. I don't know if these are true or false, that they put such an emphasis, as have, you know, academia and all these other places, on hiring diverse pilots that, you know, similarly have, I guess, been shepherded through the system, forced upwards, whether they're ready or not, and now have been flying with older, quote unquote, white pilots who are retiring or close to retirement age. And of course, the airline industry also lost a lot of pilots during COVID who retired rather than get jabbed, who retired or took an early retirement while that was down and they were trying to buy people out. But they're supposedly telling us that a lot of the issues with landing, a lot of the accidents, because there have been a lot of accidents too. A Boeing plane landed. I don't know if this was a technical issue or not, a mechanical issue, but it landed. Airline wing hit the ground. There's another one that ran off the edge of the runway that was supposedly pilot error. And people are saying this is due to DEI hiring. And, you know, I don't know if that's true. I'm not necessarily going to buy into that, mostly because the automation in these planes has gotten to the point now where I don't care what color your skin is, you're more or less flipping switches and the computer's handling most of what's going on in the big planes. So I don't know. I don't know how much lack of training or skin color can alter that. You know, are they slower flipping the switch? Is that what we're arguing? Seems kind of stupid, but just while we're talking about airplanes, we'll bring it up. Okay. Next thing we'll move on to is, the UK, actually, you know what? We'll stay on the DEI stuff because this was one of those things on the First Episode podcast, which is the new, you know, comedy review podcast for TV that I'm doing with Rico, of course, Lions of Liberty's legal counsel, and our buddy Donnie. Well, we review first episodes of old shows and new shows. We just did Shogun. Great show, by the way. I highly recommend you go check out the First Episode podcast. We talked about that in Baywatch this week. But Shogun's a great show. Now, I've read the book. It's a very long book. I read it when I was young, but it's about an English sailor who then gets brought into feudal Japan just as guns are being introduced. The Portuguese are there, and they have a high trade, basically a trade monopoly with the Japanese, the English trying to break into. There's infighting between the Japanese, and the use of guns is becoming more prominent, right? Kind of like that Tom Cruise movie, right? I don't know, what's it called? White Man Samurai. sounds like a Nick Farley movie. The Last Samurai. Movie would have been better if Chris Farley was in it. Rest in peace, fatty. So this is essentially, you know, Last Samurai is kind of a ripoff of Shogun. But, you know, you've got now articles coming out from idiots at, you know, like whatever, it was like The Root, or I can't remember exactly. Let me try to find what exactly this is from. Shogun, where's Shogun? I can't find it right now. But people are writing articles questioning why there are no black people in Shogun, and arguing that, yes, black people existed in Japan, and they should be shown, right? Representation over all us. Now, let me say, one of the things I like about Shogun is that it's not some woke piece of shit. It is true to the book, which, by the way, the book didn't talk about any black people either, because as though you could argue, and this person in whatever article I'm reading, and frankly, I'm happy I'm not looking it up because I don't want to give them any clicks. But they were talking about how there was a warlord in Japan who people were saying was black. Now, look, is it possible that somehow, some way, black people got brought to Japan, which would be unbelievably difficult unless somehow the Portuguese brought them as slaves? Let's say somehow black people ended up in Japan, and they're half arguing too that there was a different part of Japan where the skin was darker, but that doesn't make them black. Let's be very specific in that, as we currently know what black is defined as. Is there theoretically a possibility that a black person could have gotten to Japan and had sex with a Japanese lord and created a son that somehow took prominence? I guess, but it's not a high probability. I'd say a very low probability. The same probability that I'm going to have in figuring out that, you know, aliens have come down and replaced Hillary Clinton with a lizard, about the same as a Japanese warlord being black or half black. I just don't think it's going to happen, especially in that crazy, crazy culture back then. So this person is arguing that black people needed to have representation. And as I said, it's possible. I'm sure there were some black people there somehow, but what are we going to say their ratio was per the overall population, right? A white Englishman was seen as an absolute, you know, holy crap, is that Bigfoot when he arrived, right? The Portuguese were there. The Portuguese are not dark skin, right? But they're not light skin either. They're certainly not as light skin as a Brit that's been, you know, in the bow of a ship. Well, I guess he'd be kind of sunny, but that was outside the norm. And somehow they're trying to argue that this white person who represents an outside the box, you know, shock should also be accompanied by what? Several black people in a all Japanese show. It's just fucking moronic. And yet this is the shit people are getting paid to write. This is why Vice magazine, by the way, Vice didn't publish this. Vice magazine, which, by the way, let me dance on the grave of that company. Valued at like $4.5 billion, or maybe it was $5.3 billion 5 years ago. Vice had television networks. They had their online networks. They had, you know, social media content. They have advertising agencies were built within Vice. They're now bankrupt. They're dead. They're gone. They're not publishing their website anymore. Adios, muchachos. Why? Because they started writing moronic garbage like this that has no basis in reality, that has no historical context that you can even argue. And this guy's trying to make some sort of point together. It doesn't make sense. Not only does it make sense, but it's also Google AI level of rewriting history to the point where people just shake their heads and go, I'm being force-fed garbage here. You're seeing a transition in Hollywood. You're seeing a transition away from this crap. Shogun is the latest example of that. Sanity is winning. People are seeing, and as I said before, you can only lose so much money before you change course. And all these companies, including Hollywood, are being forced to change. By the way, I did watch the Oscars. You know, Jimmy Kimmel's a jerk off. His whole thing, reading Trump's tweet about him, was stupid and unfunny. They were all up there yakking about Palestine and Israel is predictable, which is kind of funny because there's not a small amount of Jews in Hollywood. It'd be interesting to see if all those actors that stood up there and were like, hey, you know, Palestine just never worked again. It's very, very real possibility. But getting back to Shogun, it's just unbelievable. Watch Shogun. It's funny. But in that same vein, I was just shaking my head because Oregon Trail, right? And this is the myths, by the way. There's something that is trending right now today. It's Gamergate 2. Now, Gamergate, the first one is about sexual harassment or something like that. Gamergate 2 right now is trending on Twitter. And what it's about is that a woman who worked for a EA Studios owned development company who's working on a new game had done a video interview similar to how the chick that worked for Bud Light, who did the Dylan Mulvaney thing, got herself in even deeper water by being a stupid, boastful leftist about just how shitty her opinions of white males are. This person did an interview talking about how she, as a black woman leading this studio's development team on a new game, only hired people of color because white people were not good to work with and she found them intimidating, which of course is racist, right? Racist to say that all white people are difficult to work with, racist to say they're intimidating. If you said black people were difficult to work with and intimidating, you would be fucking condemned to the ghettos of canceled culture so deep that we'd have to feed you through a straw or lower stuff in a bucket, you know, put the lotion on its skin. That's where you live now for saying black people are intimidating, difficult to work with. But these dumb assholes have no problem saying it about white people. So there's a new Gamergate scandal. Now, in the midst of this, we also see the new Oregon Trail, which, yeah, why not remake it? And this is shared by Heidi Briones, who's a good follow. So they have a new Oregon Trail. Now, if you'll remember, Oregon Trail took place back in a brutal time in American history when, of course, the people were forcibly removing Native Americans from their land. Now, do I think that's great to do? No, I do not. Do I think that people should be subjected to brutal treatment and have land taken away from them? No, I do not. But at the same time, I do acknowledge that it was a different time in history. And I can't stand when leftists or libertarians, by the way, like to take the position that we have to somehow hold people of a different time and era to our current standards. Like, this is so prominent on the left with renaming shit and tearing down statues and judging people. And, you know, the founding fathers are a bunch of racists and bigots. That's why we shouldn't even listen to anything they say. Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Conquest and violence were what you did for a very long time until technology, until trade caught up to that. And people figured out that trade was a far better option to conquest with far less blood, far less loss of life, far less expensive, mind you. Because guess what? If you go out and conquest, you're losing a lot of lives, which costs a lot of money. You have to pay people to do it, or you have to compensate them. Or if you happen to own these people medieval style, right? They're working your farms. Now you get nobody to fucking farm for you. Now you have no wheat for your castle. It was very expensive, right? Practicality. That's why the market wins, guys, because it's the most practical way for everybody to succeed and enrich themselves and forward culture as well as the economy. But let's not pretend that it didn't take some time to get there. Of course, Oregon Trail, we got to rewrite that, right? Because that can't be condoned. People have to know that it was bad. It was bad to go across. These people were killing bison. They were killing Native Americans. They were shitting themselves in rivers, and turtles were dying. This is a fucking stupid thing that the Oregon Trail dickholes post when you log on to play the game. In creating, actually, I'll share my screen here. Why not? Why not share a screen? Let's do it. Let's share the screen. Here you go. In creating this new game in the beloved The Oregon Trail series, we were determined to better depict Native American perspectives. For Indigenous peoples, westward expansion was not an adventure, but an invasion. Recognizing this complex history, we have collaborated with Native American scholars to bring a new level of respectful representation to the game. For the first time, they made this part in green. They really want you to know just how super special they are for doing this. For the first time, the game features Native American playable characters and stories, celebrating the history and cultures of the peoples who first live on this land and still live here today. Super cool. I wonder if you will be able to scalp the Oregon Trailians. Look, if that's the case, I'm all in it. But you don't just say you can scalp people now. And I'd be like, awesome. Okay, let's do it. You died from scalping. One of the things that also really pisses me off too is that all these historical contexts always try to paint the white people as the only violent ones. Now, let me be very clear in saying, and this is a matter of historical record easily found, Native American cultures, Native American tribes also attacked each other, raped each other, made slaves of other tribes, brutally massacred all the men and took the women and children. Maybe they kept the males. Maybe they killed the males. They were not a peace-loving people. Okay? Let's be very, very clear about that. They were not a peace-loving people. So it just drives me up the wall when somehow one race, one culture is painted as inherently good and the other is painted as inherently evil, because it's simply bullshit. So, you know. Fuck these assholes. I think, you know, again, I wonder if the gaming industry is going to have a huge comeuppance when you look at how they're creating this crap. Knowing that that is in the game now, I will not play Oregon Trail. Now, the odds of me playing were slim anyway, but de facto now, I will not. Vote with your wallet. All right, last thing here, and then we'll wrap it up for today's show, is that the United Kingdom, and I don't know if this is directly correlated with the WPATH release of documents. Now, if you're not following along with the WPATH, WPATH essentially was a standard that has been used by the World Health Organization, by the CDC, for recommendations for transgender treatments for children and adults. But children, of course, is where it really comes into play, because as released by Public from Michael Schellenberger and others, the WPATH documents, which were leaked internally, showcase that doctors not only knew for a fact that there were detrimental outcomes for children, including depression, difficulties with sexual function, bone density problems, which they hid from the public, right? Because all of the narratives that have been passed out from this WPATH to people's talking points within transgender clinics for your general, you know, politics, right? The Biden administration and affirmative care. Everything has said that, well, it's kind of like COVID, safe and easy, safe and effective, right? Safe and effective. They told us that you could turn off puberty with these puberty blockers and turn them right back on at a later point in time. Like no time has been missed, which is 100% inaccurate. It's a complete lie. It changes your body permanently and you can never alter that. Never. So these documents come out showcasing that the doctors knew that they were lying, like these WPATH people knew they were lying, and also that they didn't really understand half of what they were talking about, but they told the world that they did. This comes after the United Kingdom shut down the Tavistock Clinic, which was its largest transgender clinic, because of massive amounts of reporting that people were not doing any due diligence. Again, affirmative care, right? If a kid comes in and says they are different gender, well, that's it. Give them the blockers, put them on gym, chop their tits off, you know, flop that dick inside out, whatever it takes. That's what we're going to do. And there was no due diligence. There was no looking into background issues of mental health. There was no looking into examples of abuse or instances of autism or social contagions. It was just done. And the outcomes for this were awful. This also comes at the same time that new studies have come out showcasing that the entire lie that was parroted to guilt parents into going along with this madness of altering their children instead of allowing them to maybe grow out of a phase to become gay or lesbian or to just live their lives as straight people who have gone through a phase. The lie that was told to people was always, would you rather have a living son or a dead daughter? Indicating that your child was going to commit suicide if they were not allowed to transition to a new gender. The new studies that have come out, and again, these lies were told. Let me make this clear. These lies were told, and I've said this on the show and emphasized this before, during a time when this was forced on everybody, the adoption of this was so fast because of these online activists, because of cancel culture, because of dipshits like Joe Biden and governments across the world that adopted the stance of affirmative care before we had any results, any clinical results from the generation that had just gone through it. Now we have the results, and the results are what you would have imagined and dreaded, which is that there's zero efficacy or proof that transgender identifying youth have a higher suicide rate if they are not permitted to transition or do not transition. It's a lie. It's always been a lie. There's no evidence of it whatsoever. But that was the lie that was told to guilt people into forcing their children through this or allowing their children or being, I don't even know, convinced to make the change. So that's been debunked. So the United Kingdom just this week has announced that they will not allow puberty blockers to be given to children. This, I think, is an absolute win for children in the UK, for sure. It's a win for a culture. And I'm not saying that culture should not be anti-transgender in any way. I've never held that opinion, and nor will I ever hold that opinion. If you want to be transgender, if you are transgender and you live your life and you're not infringing on anybody else's life or rights or, advocating for the physical and medical abuse of children, live the happiest life you can. Happy for you. But this is a win for culture and a win for reality, in that we now as a culture, or at least in the UK, but I think that we're going to see that here, because that's a massive, it's not only the UK, it's the UK, Norway, I believe, Sweden, I believe all done the same thing. And in the United States, to have Joe Biden and others out there still saying, we believe in affirmative care, not for long, because now we have distinct odds, we have distinct instances. But as a culture now, to accept the fact that we don't have to simply go along with this crap, that there are horrible outcomes for these children, that there has been an absolute abdication of medical standards, of not only the medical industry as far as the institution of drugs and medicine and surgeries, but also when you're talking about mental health, when you're talking about psychologists, when you're talking about counselors, when you're talking about the academic system, right? Because still in the United States now, several states have passed bills that you are not allowed as a school to keep a gender transition, even a name change, from parents, which is the way it fucking should be. But as a culture, we're getting back to logic and reason and an adoption of, hey, let's not rush into this when we're talking about changes that are never going to be undone for the most vulnerable children. So God bless the UK for finally making the change, and we'll see if it trickles down to the United States at some point in time. All right, guys, that's going to wrap it up. If you like what we do here, I beg of you to please go and support us on Patreon, patreon.com/Lions of Liberty or lionsofliberty.locals.com. If nothing else, please do hit the subscribe button on the podcast, audio podcast on the Lions of Liberty Network. If you're watching on YouTube, be sure to hit notify, because we are still very, very shadow banned on there with our, over 6,500 subscribers. You guys won't get notified. You won't see it. Our content, we've been around too long. We've said too many things that are verboten. You have to hit notify. And of course, we're on Rumble. So check us out there. You can follow me at Brian McWilliams. Follow us at Lions of Liberty. And thank you guys for your time and for your adoration and love. All right. Peace. From me, Brian McWilliams, from the Lions of Liberty Network, and from Mean Age Daydream, keep those electric eyes on me, babe. And keep that ray gun to my head later.